ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमग्नानारिभिः सह कलौ नष्टदृशामेश पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 1 टेक्स्ट नंबर 1। This is the beginning of the fifth canto. The first chapter is entitled The Activities of Maharaj Priyavrata. In his commentary on this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a nice summary of the entire canto. But first, to invoke auspiciousness, we'll recite some of the Mangalacharanas that are given. Sridhar Swami says, Namah Srimat Panamahamsa Svad Kamalachin Makarandaya Bhakta Janamanasa Nivasaya Sri Ramaya. He offers his obeisances unto the lotus feet of Sri Ram, which are like transcendentally spiritual lotus flowers that are enjoyed by the Paramahamsa devotees, and the Lord is always residing in the hearts of the devotees, or in the minds of the devotees. Srila Jiva Goswami says, Sri Krishna, Krishna Chaitanya, Sasanata Rupaka, Gopala Raghunathapta, Vrajajiva Kapahimam. He prays that, please protect me, O Lord Krishna, and Lord Krishna Chaitanya, and along with Srila Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Bhatta Goswami, and Raghunath Das Goswami, all of whom are residents of Vrindavan. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Pranamya Sri Gurum Bhuya Sri Krishnam Karunarnavam Lokanatham Jagat Chakshu Sri Shukam Tam Upashraye. I take shelter of Srila Shukdev Goswami. He is the eye of this world, and the Lord of the world, who is Lord Krishna, who is like an ocean of transcendental mercy. Pranamya Sri Gurum Bhuya Sri Krishnam Karunarnavam. After having offered respectful obeisances unto my spiritual master, I offer respectful obeisances unto Shukdev Goswami and Lord Krishna. He summarizes the content of the fifth canto. He says in chapter 1, well, in three chapters, we get respectively descriptions of Priyavrata Maharaj, and then Agnitra Maharaj, finally Nabhi Maharaj. In three other chapters, 4 through 6, we get the description of Lord Rishabhadeva, an incarnation of the Lord. And in 8 chapters, we get a description of Bharata Maharaj, that would be 7 through 14. At one chapter, we get describing Maharaj Gaya and other descendants. That's chapter 15. In chapters next 4 chapters, we get descriptions of Jambudvipa. That's where we're all living, in case you didn't know. And then in the next chapter, 20, we get a description of the different geographical features and geological features also of the different planets, the 7 dvipas that make up the world that we know. That's in chapter 20. In chapters 20 and 22, we get these two chapters describing the movements of the sun and the different planets. In chapter 23, we hear a description of Dhruvapada. That is the Shishumar planetary system, as Prabhupada translates it. Get two more chapters, 24 and 25. They're describing those things which are beneath the sun, the various limitless places there. And then finally we end up in chapter 26, the final chapter of this canto, which describes hell. And so the general description here is how all the devas and others are protecting these worlds and the places within them. So let's read Srila Prabhupada's chapter summary. Now we're beginning the first chapter of the fifth canto, and again it's about Maharaj Priyavrata. This chapter describes how King Priyavrata enjoyed royal opulence and majesty and then returned to full knowledge. King Priyavrata was detached from worldly opulence, and then he became attached to his kingdom. But finally, he again became detached from material enjoyment and thus achieved liberation. When King Parikshit heard about this, he was struck with wonder, but he was somewhat bewildered as to how a devotee with no attachment for material enjoyment could later become attached. This is thus in astonishment, he questioned Shukdev Goswami about this. That's actually today's verse, but let's hear what the rest of the chapter says. In response to the king's inquiries, Shukdev Goswami said that devotional service, being transcendental, cannot be deviated by any material influences. Priyavrata had received transcendental knowledge from the instructions of Narad, and therefore he did not want to enter a materialistic life of enjoyment in a kingdom. He accepted the kingdom, however, at the request of such superior demigods as Lord Brahma and Lord Indra, the King of Heaven. Elsewhere we've seen this in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that a person is virtually forced to accept a situation that he doesn't want to accept in a situation that in fact hurts him. But because it's coming from the order of superiors, he has to do it. Anybody can think of an example of this from the sixth canto? What was the name of that priest? He was a demon, and therefore he was offering oblations to his forefathers, as the Smriti rules enjoin one to do. But because the devas found him doing that, even though they were the ones who employed him, what was his name? Vishwarupa, I think, no? Tvashta Vishwarupa, huh? Exactly. So he was also forced into this circumstance, and he had to suffer for it. They killed him for doing what they wanted him to do. It's an interesting thing. Many times, devotee has to suffer. And sometimes that suffering is directly instigated by, this is something we all have to deal with sooner or later. So we should take note and listen. Anyway, to continue the summary here. Everything is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller, and everyone must work accordingly. Just as a bull is controlled by a rope tied to its nose, so all conditioned souls are forced to work under the spells of the modes of nature. A civilized man, therefore, works according to the institution of varna and ashrama. Even in materialistic life, however, no one is free to act. You're not free. Everyone is compelled to accept a certain type of body offered by the Supreme Lord and thus be allotted different grades of happiness and distress. Therefore, even if one artificially leaves home and goes to the forest, he again becomes attached to materialistic life. Family life is compared to a fortress for practicing sense control. When the senses are controlled, one may live either at home or in the forest. There is no difference. In other words, whether you're in the forest or whether you're at home, if your senses are controlled, then everything is okay. And whether you're in the forest or whether you're at home, if the senses are not controlled, then nothing is okay. That's what it comes down to. Therefore, control your senses. This is the first of the essential instructions Rupa Goswami has given us. Sometimes we forget. When Maharaj Priyavrata, following the instructions of Lord Brahma, accepted the royal throne, his father Manu left home for the forest. Because Maharaj Priyavrata then married Barhishmati, the daughter of Vishwakarma. In the womb of Barhishmati, he begot 10 sons named Agnitra, Itmajaja, Yajnabahu, Mahavira, Hiranyareta, Ghritaprishtha, Savan, Medhatithi, Vitihotra, and Kavi. He also begot one daughter whose name was Urjaswati. Maharaj Priyavrata lived with his wife and family for many thousands of years. The impressions from the rims of Maharaj Priyavrata's chariot wheels created 7 oceans and 7 islands. Of the 10 sons of Priyavrata, 3 sons named Kavi, Mahavir, and Savan accepted sannyas, the 4th order of life. And the remaining 7 sons became the rulers of the 7 islands. Maharaj Priyavrata also had a second wife, in whom he begot 3 sons, named Uttama, Raivata, and Tamasa. All of them were elevated to the post of Manu. Shukadev Goswami thus described how Maharaj Priyavrata achieved liberation. Why? That we're about to hear. Please repeat. Rajovacha. Before we should again. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay. Rajovacha. Priyavrato Bhagavata. Atma Rama Katham Mune Grihe Ramata Yanmulaha Karma Bandha Parabhavaha Sri Rajovacha Priyavrato Bhagavata Atma Rama Katham Mune Grihe Ramata Yanmulaha Karma Bandha Parabhavaha Sri Rajovacha Priyavrato Bhagavata Atma Rama Katham Mune Grihe Ramata Yanmulaha Karma Bandha Parabhavaha Rajovacha. King Parikshit said, Priyavrata, King Priyavrata, Bhagavata, the great devotee, Atma Aramaha, one who takes pleasure in self-realization. Katham, why, Mune, O great sage, Grihe, at home, Aramata, enjoyed, yet mulaha, having which as the root cause, karma bandhaha, the bondage of fruitive activities, parabhavaha, the defeat of one's human mission. Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. King Parikshit inquired from Shukadev Goswami, O great sage, why did King Priyavrata, who was a great, self-realized devotee of the Lord, remain in household life, which is the root cause of the bondage of karma, fruitive activities, and which defeats the mission of human life. Please. King Parikshit inquired from Shukdev Goswami. O great sage, why did King Priyavrata, who was a great self-realized devotee of the Lord, Jai Shishinitai Gaur Krishna Balaram Radhesham Ki Jai, remain in household life, which is the root cause of the bondage of karma, fruitive activities, and which defeats the mission of human life. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the fourth canto, Srila Shukdev Goswami explains that Narad Muni perfectly instructed King Priyavrata about the mission of human life. Where in the fourth canto was that? If you were here about a week ago, you heard it. It's in chapter 31, texts 26 and 7. It's described that there were two brothers, the sons of Swayam. One was Uttanapada, which we've already heard about. Now he wants to hear about King Priyavrata. But we haven't exactly heard why yet. A hint is given to us by Viraraghavacharya, who reminds us that back in the third canto, in chapter 21, the first few texts there, that Vidura had actually asked Maitreya to tell him something about Swayambhuva Manu and his descendants. So this discussion is actually following up on that. But there's a message here, and particularly in this verse, on which the commentaries are actually quite extensive. Sometimes you wouldn't think so in the introductory verse, but important point. It's a very important question. So let's hear on what they have to say. Well, actually, first of all, I'll just mention that this information, the first sentence that Prabhupada is quoting here, it's given also by most of the acharyas, Sridhar Swami, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, etc., in their commentaries. So I'll just quote the verse. Vamsha Priyavrata Syapi Nibodha Nripasattama, O best of the kings, please understand the descendants of Maharaj Priyavrata. And then he says, Yo Naradad Atmavidyam Adhikam Yapunaramahim Bhuktva Vibhajya Putrebhya Aishwaram Samagat Padam. After having received Atmavidya, or self-realization, from Narad Muni, and understanding that, nonetheless, he again enjoyed the world. Mahi means the world. And then Vibhajya Putrebhya Aishwaram, he took all of his opulences and he distributed them amongst his sons, Samagat Padam, and he went to the supreme destination. That's from the fourth canto. So let's continue the purport. Srila Prabhupada says, the human life is to realize one's self and then gradually go back home, back to Godhead. Since Narad Muni instructed the king fully on this subject, why did he again enter household life, which is the main cause of material bondage? Maharaj Parikshit was greatly astonished that King Priyavrata remained in household life, especially since he was not only a self-realized soul, but also a first-class devotee of the Lord. A devotee actually has no attraction for household life, but King Priyavrata enjoyed household life very much. One may argue, why is it wrong to enjoy household life? This is actually coming again from Sridhar Swami. Ananuramatam ko dosha iti ched ata aha. He explains this. Well, I'll get to that in a moment. Anyway. So why is the rhetorical question here is raised by Srila Prabhupada, following Sridhar Swami. What's wrong with enjoying household life forever? The reply is that in household life, one becomes bound by the results of fruitive activities. Because if we're honest, we will admit that 99.99% of the cases, one enters household life in order to perform fruitive activities. There's really little question about it. Sometimes we read in Srila Prabhupada's books these contradictory statements. In one place it says the purpose of household life is to enjoy material facilities. In other places he writes the purpose of household life is to become elevated and go back to Godhead. And in fact, they're all true. They're contradictory and true. Because the absolute truth is of this nature. Every assertion that you find in the Shastra has its antithesis equally valid. Because the absolute truth is called achintya bheda bheda tattva. It is a truth which is not to be stuffed within the Procrustean bed of mundane logic. That is to say, you can't put a square peg in a round hole. So to try to make everything in the Shastra fit within our mundane conceptions and logic, it doesn't work. But through experience, yaswanu bhavam akhila shruti saram ekam, one can study like an ocean all the essential truths of the Shastra. It's possible through a personal experience only. And who gets that experience? That's the concluding verse, literally the last word of the Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Who knows what it is? Very famous verse you all know. Yasya deve para bhaktir yatha deve tatha guru tasyaite katita hirtaha prakashante mahatmanaha. That person who is great soul and who puts equal faith in Bhagavan and Bhagavata. The word is used here, Bhagavata. Jiva Goswami describes, what does the word Bhagavata mean? Bhagavatam atmarama iti. Bhagavadadi atmarama tvepi Bhagavata iti artha. He's just like the Supreme Lord in the sense so that he has equal opulence. In this case, what opulence does he have? He's liberated, just like the Lord is liberated. Anyway, don't want to get too far off topic here. When one can actually place his faith in the spiritual master's lotus feet, and for this reason Srila Prabhupada requested also the International Society of Krishna Consciousness to sing every morning, Sri Guru Charana Padma Kevala Bhakti Sadma. The only place where bhakti is found is in the lotus feet of the spiritual master. There are many places in Vrindavan one might look, but you're only going to find it right here, behind me. In two places, the left foot and the right foot. That's all. And Narottam Das Thakur has very nicely encapsulated the perfect conclusion of all the Shastras in this song that Srila Prabhupada therefore asked us to sing. It is so packed with meaning, so deep and profound, that if we can realize nothing else in this human form of life, that will be enough, frankly. I think it was Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. He was illiterate. Was it him? No. Anyway, one of our great acharyas, he used to carry this book around with him all the time, Prema Bhakti Chandrika. Somebody maybe knows, I forget now, but that's what happens when you get older. Anyway, so this is the idea, Bhagavata. So the essence of household life is sense enjoyment, Prabhupada says here, one of these bewildering statements. And as long as one engrosses his mind in working hard for sense enjoyment, one becomes bound by the reactions of fruitive activities. Now, this is not just for the grihasthas. This is even for the sannyasis, even the acharyas. If they do not very carefully control their motives, then they also become bound. Because what is it that binds you? The selfishness, the personal desire independent of Krishna's purpose. If we invest that, what the Shastra calls, ishada peta, when you've turned away from Bhagavan, then you get this, instantly you get the karma bandha, and therefore you get fear. Bhayam dvityav binaveshita syat ishad apetasya viparyayo smriti. Who are the people who get this problem? The ishad apetas. At any moment, if you turn away from the Lord, this is what you get. You instantly start tallying up an account of karmic debits that you have to deal with. It's not just credits, it's debits also. So this is the problem, karma bandha. The acharyas have more to say. Let us finish the purport. This ignorance of self-realization is the greatest defeat of human life. The human form of life is especially meant for getting out of the bondage of fruitive activities. But so long as one is forgetful of his life's mission and acts like an ordinary animal, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, he must continue his conditioned life of material existence. Such a life is called Surup Vismriti. Or in many of the commentaries here, it's also called Surup Tiraskar. Tiraskar. Tiraskar means to turn away. Again, ishada peta, the same idea. To turn away from yourself and to turn away from God is more or less the same thing because we're part and parcel. That is the Shuddha Jiva's identity. So, therefore, in Vedic civilization, one is trained in the very beginning of life as a brahmachari. A brahmachari must execute austerities and refrain from sex indulgence. Therefore, if one is complete in principles of brahmacharya, he generally does not enter household life. Patra. Patra means the receptacle. You have to be a good kripa patra, as we say in Hindi, a good receptacle of the mercy of what the spiritual master is offering. If a brahmachari does not take full advantage of that ashram and the training that it affords one, that is the person who generally enters household life. Of course, for some people it's better. That's admitted. So, such a person who can take advantage, he's called, Prabhupada said, he's then called a naishtik brahmachari, which indicates total celibacy. And we know in Dharma Shastra that there are eight kinds. It's very strict, actually, for those who are practicing brahmacharya properly. Very strict. King Parikshit was thus astonished that the great King Priyavrata, although trained in the principles of naishtik brahmacharya, and called the Bhagavata here in this verse, equal in opulence, of at least transcendental opulence, with the Lord. But he entered household life. The words Bhagavata Atma Ramaha are very significant in this verse. Jiva Goswami has pointed out that they're the same thing, actually. In any verse, the words are scrambled a little bit because that's the nature of poetry. It's called poetic license. Generally, in the beginning of the commentaries, they will give what we call anvaya, or the proper word order. In this case, it's mune, atma ramaha bhagavata priyavrataha krihe katham aramata yanmula karma bandha parabhava. Because that makes it more clear. The core sentence here is that, oh great sage, that even though this priyavrata was a great devotee and also an atma rama, then why enjoy his household life, which is considered to be the very root of both karmic bondage and the defeat of the human opportunity? This is what he's saying here. So if one is self-satisfied, as is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is called Bhagavata Atmaramaha. This is coming from I think it's Jiva Goswami, or maybe it's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He says, yeah. Bhagavate iti amara tvepi bhavan ivati vishishta iti artha. The idea is that he's just as transcendental as you are. That's what he says. So that's Bhagavata Atmarama. There are types of satisfaction. Karnamis are satisfied in their fruitive activities. That means that if you're mostly satisfied by activities that have some result for yourself, then you're a karnami. Doesn't matter what you look like, how you dress, who you hang out with, or what you chant. Gyanis are satisfied to merge into the effulgence of Brahman. So if you're satisfied to be inactive, and if you also prefer a liberated state, then these are the characteristics of what we call a gyani. Again, it doesn't matter what your external condition may appear to be. Now listen to the third definition here. The devotees are satisfied to engage in the Lord's service. We want to be active, and we also want to be active not for ourselves, but for Him. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami shakale ashanta Krishna bhakta nishkama ataibo shanta means that the person who wants bhoga is the karmi. He's called a bhukti kami. The person who wants mukti, he's called a mukta kami or a jnani. And the person who wants siddhis is the yogi. The devotee doesn't want anything. He only wants to please the Lord. He has desires, but they're not his. They're the Lord's desires. That's the difference. So the Lord is self-satisfied, comparatively speaking. You have three people who want three different classes of things, but what does the Lord want? He's self-satisfied. He alone is self-satisfied. And someone who is completely absorbed in Him is also considered to be equally self-satisfied. Because he's virtually disappeared. That's why we call it Kaivalya. Kunti Devi in the first canto says this is real Kaivalya. What does Kaivalya mean? A state of Kevaladvaita. A state of complete identification. You don't lose your identity in this Kaivalya. But you do at the same time. Remember I said a moment ago there's contradictions everywhere? This is another one. They're perhaps best encapsulated by Krishna himself in the beginning verses of chapter 9, or in the Upanishads for that matter. Tadejati tadnaijati tadurite tadvantike in Ishopanishad. Contradictions everywhere. But it is not contradictory. That's another contradiction, isn't it? Therefore we say, achintya khalu ye bhavana tans tarkina yojayet. You cannot apply your mundane logic to try to understand this absolute truth. He will not allow it. Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavritaha. I will remain forever covered to such a person. Even on Facebook, if you don't like the way the person looks, you don't have to accept him as your friend. So the Lord reserves this right. Anyway. So, Bhagavata Atmaramaha. The Lord is satisfied because he is fully opulent. And one who is satisfied by serving him is called Atmaramaha. That is how we're describing Priyavrata Maharaj. Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatiti siddhaya ityadi. Out of many thousands of persons, only one may endeavor for liberation. And in many thousands of persons attempting to become liberated, one may achieve liberation from the anxieties of material existence and become self-satisfied. He may. Now, this is Prabhupada's addition here, this verse. Actually, Jiva Goswami quotes another verse. Amuktanam apisiddhanam narayana parayanaha. What is the rest of it? Sudurlabha prashantadvapi mahamune. My dear sage, you should understand that the person who is prashantatma, who's whose mind and soul and even body is completely infused with peace and satisfaction, that person is sudurlabha, very, very rare. Kotishwapi mahamune, even among so many perfect and liberated souls, you will only find one of those persons who is Narayana Parayana, actually dedicated to Lord Narayan. It's not a very common thing to be a Vaishnava. It's not a cheap thing at all to be a Vaishnava. And yet, we are Vaishnavas. Another contradiction for you. By his grace, by his divine grace, as we say. So we're practicing maybe probate bhakti at the moment. Probate bhakti. What does that mean? We're actually criminal, but we have a criminal psychology, and we're on probation. As long as we're following these principles, as long as we're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and associating with other like-minded persons trying to become sadhus, we have become sadhus, we don't know the difference. Then we're also considered to be Vaishnavas. But we have to be very carefully assess what is our actual position. There's a story about someone asked this one Catholic lady, Catholic nun, saint, they say, this Mother Teresa of Kolkata. So they said, what is it that inspires you to give your life so much to these people? And you know, I mean, some people in this, even in the material world, they really sacrifice, what to speak of in godly life. So she became pensive for a moment before answering that question, and she said, I know that within my heart is dwelling another Hitler. I'm harboring another Hitler. And unless I constantly try to subjugate that personality, it will take over, and who knows what will happen to the world. That was her answer. That kind of humility we want to cultivate. That's the primary characteristic, and by Sanatana Goswami's definition, it is the defining principle, the defining characteristic. It is non-different from Krishna Prema. Absolute, unconditional humility. This is stated in the Brihad Bhagavatamritam. So, the Bhagavata Atmarama is one of these rare souls. Even that satisfaction, I should say, Prabhupada quotes, Munushyanam Sahasreshu, one may achieve liberation. Even that satisfaction, however, is not the ultimate satisfaction. The jnanis and the karmis have desires, as do the yogis, but the devotees have no desires. Satisfaction in the service of the Lord is called akama. Now here's another contradiction. If we want to become akama, then why are we chanting Kama Gayatri three times a day? Why does Rupa Goswami call this process Kamanuga Bhakti, the main branch of the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching of Raghunuga Bhakti is called Kamanuga Bhakti? Why? Because although we give up desires that are material, we completely embrace the desires of the Lord. That is the principle. Kama. So kama is actually the most essential thing in bhakti at the same time that it's the worst enemy of bhakti. It just depends on your personal adhikar. Therefore, Krishna instructs Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sve sve adhikare yanishta saguna parikirtata. That for each person to be situated solidly in what he or she is actually able to do, actually qualified and has prerogative to do, that is called guna. And to attempt anything else is called dosha, flaw. Therefore, Sridhar Swami asked us, ko dosha? Iti ched, somebody should ask, what is the dosha? That's the dosha. You're attempting to do something which is outside of your nature. It's outside of your adhikar. Therefore, we fail in material life, and we become frustrated. Or even if we don't, if we're in so much illusion that we think we're happy, but then it's taken away from us because it's not to be. You cannot fight with this person. He has got you like a bull with a ring through the nose. He gives a little tug and you've got to go where he says. That is called dharma. Dharma means the intrinsic property of a thing in scientific language. This is the definition of dharma. The intrinsic or the essential characteristic, the srup or the lakshana of a thing is called its dharma. That which you cannot separate from it. So what is the jiva dharma? To serve Bhagavan. And anything else that we try to do, it's going to fail and be frustrated. So that satisfaction of the devotees, it only comes when we what the Lord wants us to do instead of what we want the Lord to do for us. Or what we want to do even for the Lord. The highest thing is to surrender. And that's why we worship the gopis, because they surrendered everything. More than anyone else. Even Uddhava worships these gopis. So, satisfaction in the service of the Lord is called a kama, freedom from desire, and this is the ultimate satisfaction. Therefore, Maharaj Parikshit inquired, how could one who was fully satisfied on the highest platform be satisfied with family life? Here it said very clearly, Aramata, he enjoyed it, he liked it. It's an inconceivable truth. Therefore, do not judge. Even if you are a learned scholar, you cannot calculate where another person is coming from if he's a Vaishnava. You cannot calculate. Be very careful. That's why social standards are important. Because if it's understood that you cannot calculate, then where is the law and order? There has to be some standard. That's called also dharma, but in a normative sense, instead of in the scientific or metaphysical sense. Normative dharma means what you actually do. And you're not really, Prabhupada said here, no one is free to act. You don't actually have a choice. You can believe anything you want, and even the Vedas will support that. But there's only a certain thing that you can do. There's only one thing you can do, and that is your dharma. This path, general Vedic path, it offers infinite choices about what to believe, but no choice about what to do. At the end of the day, no matter how you interpret Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is going to fight, is it not? Everybody, there's no denying that. It's what Krishna asked. So, therefore, Maharaj Parikshit, how can he do this? Now, finally, the word parabhava is in this verse is also significant. When one is satisfied in family life, he is doomed. Because he must already have forgotten his relationship with the Lord. I mentioned a few moments ago when the brahmacharis decide to marry, it means it's already decided. They've already forgotten. All of us, really, whoever maintains these material attachments, we're already in Maya. That's understood. Because you cannot embrace a position of material enjoyment in this world and remember the Supreme Lord at the same time. The Jiva Goswami and others have pointed out in their commentaries. It's just like that. So, this is called defeat, parabhava. Prahlad Maharaj describes how the activities of family life implicate one more and more. Does anybody know this verse? Atmapatam griham andhakupam. That's from the seventh canto, I believe. Household life is like a dark well. If one falls into this well, his spiritual death is assured. How Priyavrata Maharaj remained a liberated Paramhamsa, even within family life, is described in the next verse. Now, I don't want to spoil the plot. I'm going to end here. But I hope that we're all hanging on our seats waiting for the answer to this question. Because it is a very, very pertinent question. One thing that Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, just to give you a little preview, he comments, I think, on text 5, is that when a devotee has to undergo reverses, there are generally two reasons. One reason is that he has committed some offense. Or she's committed some offense. That's the usual reason. Sometimes, however, Prabhupada writes therein that the Lord or his devotee wants the devotee to undergo some particular impediment. Are you ready for that? It's one thing to take, we can take things from the Lord, we can even take things from the spiritual master, but can we take it from the devotee? That's usually what we have a problem with, isn't it? Interesting thing to think about, but I'm not going to go there too much. Someone else will have the great good fortune of explaining that principle in text number 5. You can jump ahead if you're losing sleep about it, which you should be, because that's actually the definition of shushrushu. Sushrushu. What does sushrushu mean? It means, in general parlance, it means to be submissive, but linguistically speaking, it literally means to be very eager to hear. Jiva Goswami, I think it's Jiva Goswami, he describes in his commentary on the second verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam with regards to Kaitava Dharma. He says, the person who becomes sushrushu, eager to hear submissively, is the person who has developed enough piety through performing ordinary swadharma parayana. Just like if we want to become narayana parayana, we have to first go through the stage of swadharma parayana. So he comments there that in order to just become sushrushu alone, it's not the entry-level qualification for most people in the modern age. It requires some adhikara in itself. Just to want to hear submissively is not an easy thing. A pious person can do this. An impious person is incapable of doing it. He's going to hear what he wants and reject what he doesn't like, or misinterpret because of illusions. What Krishna calls elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, dvandva moha, illusions produced of his dualistic existence. So this is another key area here, since Prabhupada has mentioned it in the chapter summary, that unless we're solidly situated in pious behavior, that's a very, very important preliminary if we're interested in becoming sushrushu, because it takes hearing submissively even in order to serve the mahat. Mahat sevam is generally the formula, isn't it? Who knows what verse I'm thinking of from second chapter of Bhagavatam? Sushrushoho shradadanasya vasudeva syan mahat sevaya vipra, right? So even to see, we're all serving Srila Prabhupada, but how well? How much? Even to do that, one has to be genuinely sushrushu in order to be shushrusho shradadanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi. All right, I'm going to stop here. If anybody has any questions or comments, we can discuss a little further here. Chashmawala.
Hare Krishna, Mukunda Datta Prabhu. So we see, after this example of Maharaj Priyavrata, that the jiva in Goloka, similarly, is undertaking a similar return journey back to Godhead. But actually, what is the process for the jiva for falling down? Is it gradually or something very brutal to go to the material world and after trying to come back to Godhead?
I think you're asking if the process of going back to Godhead is a gradual process or is it...
Falling down.
Coming this way, yes. from Goloka.
From Goloka.
This is a perennial topic. it's somewhat controversial. We have to admit that all the acharyas say one thing about it, and Srila Prabhupada says something else about it. If the issue has been fully delineated appropriately, and that's another question. It's also something that's not really directly related to this verse, so I think I'm going to park your question And we can deal with something that is relevant to today's verse. But I do have a responsibility to point out that there is a controversy about this. I don't think it's been satisfactorily settled either. That's enough to say. But whatever Srila Prabhupada says, as I mentioned earlier, Guru Mukhapad Babaka Chitete Kodiya Aikyo, that we want to embrace. That's the bottom line. Anything else? No other questions, so we'll stop here. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.